Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and the Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso, Cole Hernaday.
I'm a black star.
And Nicole Lamb.
Hi.
Okay, what did you mean by that?
I miss David Bowie. I do. I miss him a lot. And I got it, you know, playing in the car right now.
Well, it's it's a
different
part.
Oh, that was a pun. Anyway, let's go back to comics.
Keep going, Ben.
I don't know. It kind of feels like what I was gonna say.
It's the Cole Nicole show right now. No, not at all.
This is the hip hop version of our podcast, where I talk about anything and everything hip hop related.
And black stars.
Well, we recently underwent daylight savings time here in Seattle, so I guess people's schedules are kind of screwed up. All right, so we saved so much daylight. Anyway, so let's talk about Emerald City Comic Con, because it's coming up soon.
Yes, it is.
And first weekend in April. Have we learned anything new? I know we didn't talk about this before we started rolling. I apologize for that. But it's a thing that's happening, and it's popular.
Yes.
And
it's very popular.
Very popular. Yeah. You should come.
Selling out.
All the things that I know about it are just from our front of we're ordering tons of trade paperbacks yes. to take to the convention, and you should stop by and look at all the trade paperbacks
and
that we will be selling.
All of them.
Yeah.
Yes, don't just look at them.
Yeah. Pro tip, if you want to get on Chris and Nicole's good graces, you will buy everything
yes.
they take yes. to the Emerald City Comic Con.
Just buy everything we hand to you. We'll be generous that way.
Yeah, and we're not going to just give you any old thing. We'll give you some good stuff.
They will even give you an itemized receipt.
Not at the convention.
Never mind that.
I could give it to you here.
There's a secret agenda here, right? Because if you sell everything in your little island...
We don't have to bring it back.
No, wait, no. Then you can go and play at the convention.
Oh, no.
Then you can get... Really?
I'm not going to the convention.
Oh, but I mean, okay, theoretically, that's right. By the by, Chris has got to stay here and hold down the fort,
yes.
which is sad.
No, it's not.
No, it works out great. But I mean,
I'm antisocial. It's okay.
Oh, sorry, what's that?
At the convention, we will have our Faith variant covers. We'll have one through three, and then I think we're also going to have a deal for number four.
Yeah, if you buy
that will
the
come
three.
Out after the con.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be definitely worth coming by the booth to check out. And
all right,
yes.
Yeah.
So check out the Comics Dungeon booth at Emerald City Comic Con. Do you guys know where in the convention center you guys are going to be?
Not yet. They will get that information to us pretty soon. They usually start signing off like the maps out. And then we get to see what our placement is like. So,
cool.
Yes.
Alrighty. So, moving on. So, Emerald City Comic Con, first weekend in April. We will talk about it again, I guarantee. All right. Moving on. Something sad happened in the news. Now, I didn't really grow up reading comic books per se, but I did read Mad Magazine all the time. And one of the Mad Magazine stalwarts, Al Jaffe, who recently turned 95. No, I'm wrong. It's not sad. He didn't pass away. I thought I wrote this down because he passed away. He actually just got really old. Which I guess can be sad in its own way. Maybe by the time this airs, he will have died.
Speak for yourself, you 40-year-old youngster.
Yes, yes. Cole, we can make fun of Cole's age all we want.
No, we can start making fun of Ben Lawrence now.
I did recently.
He jumped the 40 hump lately.
Happy birthday.
You have a
recently.
Problem with
yeah.
it or need it to, you know, use
no,
it
No, not at all. It's not a crutch. All right, so... Al Jaffe, he's famous for painting the fold-ins on the very last page mm-hmm. of Mad Magazine, which was a brilliant way to devalue them.
Yeah.
Because if you did not do that, if you had old Mad magazines that didn't have the two creases in the back on the back cover, then they're probably worth a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Do you sell a lot of Mad magazines here?
We do carry old ones. They kind of move in chunks every few months.
Yeah.
They're not consistent, but the older you get, especially if you get to the very few first chunk that are not magazines, they were comics first.
Mm-hmm.
Those are fantastic to come by, and we actually still have a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the really, really old ones are the nice ones.
But they were never an outrageously sought-after collectible comic book.
Not for
it
us.
Really was a humor magazine that people would pick up on the stands, and it was kind of, for all intents and purposes, kind of a disposable comedy mag, right?
I think they're still looked at as that. We have a father and son that come in every once in a while looking for old issues of Mad. Mm-hmm. And they're not looking for collectible sake. They're looking for...
Because they want to read them.
Yeah, they want to read them and enjoy them. And I think that that's something that stayed consistent with Mad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the ones I had have been recycled. Well, the ones that I collected when I was a kid, my parents recycled them when I went to college.
Because you creased the backs. Because
I creased the backs, and I probably cut them up and did other nasty little boy things to them.
Rolled your silly putty on them.
That came out wrong. Anyway.
You rolled your silly putty on them.
Anyway.
That came out wrong, too.
So
okay, let's move on.
As we all know,
just Nicole cackling like everything.
As we all know, Ta-Nehisi Coates is writing the new Black Panther,
woo-hoo!
And the design has been revealed. Have we seen what he looks like?
It looked the
it's
same
radically
to me.
Different.
Yeah.
I didn't think there was any radical departure from what I had seen before. Yeah.
If anything's a departure, it's the design for the film, which is fascinating costume design.
Which doesn't throw me off or anything. I like the kind of silver highlights.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's cool.
It looks great. I mean, the article that you had linked for it was...
But the illustrations showed in preview for the latest issue just look marvelous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am very excited
about
that
Freeze,
book.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Stelfreeze is a really good
And they refer to him in the article as living legend Brian Stelfreeze. And I'm like, when did that happen?
He's popular.
Yeah, but he's, I mean, how do you, that's a darn good publicist right there who just elevates you to living legend status. I mean, I need one of those publicists.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah. No, just me.
All right.
So if you would like to be that person for Cole Hornady.
I'd be the abiding legend.
I have to say a lot of the
and now
covers...
the abiding legend, Chris Casso.
Yes.
Yes, Nicole.
The covers for Black Panther, usually variant covers are kind of the bane of our existence. Yeah. But as somebody who's just looking at the pretty covers.
Yeah.
They're really cool. Mm-hmm. There's also, I think it's for a future issue, where there's a gorgeous cover by Cho. It's a painted cover by Frank Cho, mm-hmm. With Black Panther by a bunch of kitty cats, really big kitty cats, and they're really cool. And there's like the design ones that they've been doing, which a lot of times aren't necessarily very cool, but because I love Black Panther so much, I think it's awesome.
How many issues do you think before Claw shows up?
Well, considering they were seeding the movie, that character in the movies, probably pretty darn soon.
Yeah.
But I'm not, you know, I've never been a big Black Panther fan. I got the Kirby collection because I was going through this phase where I wanted to read the Kirby stuff. And that, you know, that stuff is charming and terribly, terribly dated and, you know, marginally racist, though it was supposed to be a progressive book for the day. But
you got the time traveling gold frogs that you have to hump each other.
Time traveling, but the priest stories,
yes,
you know, talked about them last year in the collection. And I still have not gotten around to reading those, but the bits I have read were fascinating and I really need to read those.
Well, I have them. You can borrow them if you want.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Have pages from Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther come out yet? Have we been able to read any of his stuff?
On the link, there was like two pages or so.
Oh, look at that. Yes. I should really read the links I sent out to you guys.
I thought I posted it on the Panel Jumper page.
I should probably read the panel.
You don't know what I'm doing over there, do you? Oh, my goodness.
You post stuff every day. That's all I care about.
Okay.
People like it. Hey, the new trailer for Captain America Civil War came out. Speaking of Black Panther, because Black Panther was in it. But that wasn't the big news coming out of that trailer. The inclusion of Spider-Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, when I just saw the gif of just the shot of Spider-Man snatching the Cap's shield and then doing the superhero land, I thought it was fan-made. I did. I'm like, what's the big deal? It's fan-made. And then I saw the trailer in its entirety. I'm like, oh, there was just something about the quality of the costume and the effect and the fact that, you know, that superhero land is now so cliche.
It's a joke in the movie.
Yeah, it is a joke in the Deadpool movie. Did you just say that? I think you just said that. Is there an echo in here?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I for a second I was like,
there is now. Jeez.
There's one definitely in here.
My favorite version so far, though, of that is because people are already playing with it. They're putting like Deadpool into the GIF and all that. But somebody just took the trailer and they replaced the audio with the opening music to the Japanese Spider-Man show from the 70s.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty good.
And then, like, Spider-Man.
And then he says, you know, the emissary of hell has arrived. And it's just like, I'll watch that movie right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really want to watch that movie right now.
One of the critiques that I heard about Spider-Man's new reveal is that the pitch of his voice is too high. Like, he sounds too young. Now, I know Peter Parker is a teenager. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's not a teenager anymore, but in the comics. But, you know, in the movies, he's still ostensibly a teenager, I suppose.
Right, yeah.
And he sounds like he's almost, like, post or prepubescent. He's a 14-year-old.
Yeah, he sounded fine to me.
What I'm kind of reading into it, too, is that he's meek in that instance because he's being forced. I'm getting the sense that, like, Tony's just like, you come here, I kill your Aunt May. Kind of thing, you know, because Tony's kind of a douche in general.
Do you think Tony's going to force Peter Parker to unmask himself in the movie?
No, there's not enough time for that.
But, too many other things going on.
But that was a great bit, though, in the Civil War comic book when they did all that in the Iron Spider, because that my favorite moment was, you know, Peter hemming and hawing around or hedging around, you know, do I get paid for this gig?
Right.
Yes, you'll be on the payroll. Oh, thank God.
Right.
It was like one of the best moments.
But I actually did like that they had, in the actual like Spider-Man comics, him finally deciding to flip sides and go with Cap, they actually had like a really good sequence there. So I kind of hope that they do get into stuff like that, even though there might not be time since we're throwing in so many characters.
Right.
But just a like Cap just being like, hey, by the by, civil liberties, you know, stuff like that. And you get some flip-flopping going on. Yeah.
I'm on board with Marvel movies, period. So okay. I'm the opposite of a party pooper. I don't know. I'm jumping on the bandwagon always. So when me and my husband watched the trailer together, we got super nerdy about it and just went, he's home. We were like excited. I'm glad that Spider-Man can be back in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, I thought the X-Men trailer looked like a fan-made movie, and that just looks awful.
Hear.
To me, just like that one just...
It looked better. Not going to say good. It looked better to me because they adjusted the color system for Apocalypse. You know, so he stopped looking like a Power Rangers ooze villain with all bright purples, and they gave him more hushed blue tones. And just like, oh, God, no, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like.
He's just still not big enough. At least in the trailers, his presence is not, you know, because he's this gargantuan being. And I know he can change his size, and they established that in the trailer, but, you know, I've always seen him as this, dark side.
Big guy.
Sized villain.
Yeah. I mean, his build-a-figure in the Marvel Legends line was as big as Galactus.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow. I have that one.
He's a big boy.
Yeah.
Anyway, anytime you want me to tear apart the X-Men trailer, we can do that, but that's...
I would thoroughly
enjoy
that.
Not what we're about this.
All right. Well, maybe in some future week we'll tear apart
the X-Men comes out in late May, right?
Maybe.
Mid-May? I think it's May. Yeah, something like that.
I just had a thought for like a future like subject. Why is there an archetype for big blue purple beefy boys for villains? Because between Darkseid, Apocalypse, Mongol's yellow but big guy, and then anytime Starlin,
there's some purpley in his costume though.
Yeah. And anytime Starlin creates a cosmic character, it's kind of like a stocky, beefy, I'm a big guy kind of thing. And then Apocalypse, Thanos, you know, blue face, purple face. So.
Well, speaking of a big blue beefy boy, I got some bittersweet news. The Tick is returning.
Good rollover.
Wow, that is... You are the crown prince of segues, I must say.
Yeah, man, I'm so glad you said that.
Wow.
There you go.
You guys rehearsed this, didn't you?
The Tick is returning to television but not with Patrick Warburton in the title role. He's doing another show. Now he's doing NBC's Crowded, which I'm sure will be canceled by the time The Tick starts filming.
Well, the interesting thing is that Warburton, I remember reading an interview with him years ago before he did the live show, you know, when the cartoon aired, and him saying, people came to me for years saying, I need to play The Tick, because the fellow who voiced him in the Fox Saturday morning cartoon, and of course, The Tick's just huge physical presence. You know, I think he made some comment like, I was, you know, destined to play this role. So now we have Warburton in our heads that, you know, he's the only person fit for playing that part. But, you know, someone came before.
The important The important question for me is, will Batmanuel return?
See?
Important question.
Will Batmanuel. It be Batmanuel or what was his?
Deflatormouse.
Yes, thank you.
I like both versions, but I like Batman.
And it wasn't American Made in the live action show, was it?
No.
And something else.
We blacked out on this one time.
Yeah, it was Captain Liberty.
Captain Liberty. Yeah, the most generic thing.
Yeah, so, yeah. And Nestor Carbonell is Batmanuel. They don't, this article from some website I don't see right now is doesn't say whether or not those characters are going to be returning. Who knows if the actors will be returning? It's pretty doubtful, since I know Nestor Carbonell has moved on to big cinematic endeavors. He played the mayor of Gotham,
which is the best thing ever.
Oh, I never knew that. Yeah. Oh, that's a great bit of flow there. Yeah. Well, here's the question.
He was on Just Shoot Me. I had mentioned that before, and nobody cares about that.
Yeah. Oh, Just Shoot Me. David Spade and one of those supermodel types.
Brooke Shields.
Brooke Shields, that's right.
What I neglected to look into is Ben Edlund attached to the new project?
Yes, the creative team is still there.
Yeah.
And Warburton will be executive producing. So he'll be involved somehow.
Oh, that's interesting.
He's just not going to play the team.
Oh. Interesting. Wow, all right. Well, you did your research well, young man. You did it well.
All right. Moving on. Let's talk about Deadpool. I think all of us have finally seen it.
Yep.
Warning, spoilers if you haven't seen Deadpool. So I'm not familiar with the comic. I've never read the comic. I barely knew who the character was aside from like instances of Deadpool just kind of popping up in pop culture every once in a while. But I wasn't familiar with the character. So I went into the movie kind of blind. I knew that he was a fourth wall breaking character. I knew that he's kind of irreverent and a bit of a potty mouth. And all that came true in the movie.
It comes to fruition.
Yeah. I know there have been a lot of people who have, I have some Facebook friends who just hated this film.
Really?
Just wished they could get those 2.5 hours, but it was kind of a long film.
Well, for what reasons, though?
I think, I don't know if it was because of the sort of the crass humor or the, I don't know why. I haven't been able to talk to them. Okay. Because I didn't want to, because I hadn't seen the movie by that point. Yeah.
I would wonder that, because it's very crass.
Yeah,
it's very vulgar. It's very violent. And you know, it's not going to be
so. They were surprised by the R rating.
Yeah. But so was the comic, right? Was the comic crass and rude and vulgar?
Not to the full extent of that. Because they were still main Marvel, so you know, you don't get the F word.
Right.
You get the D words.
Does it have that quantity of gore and dismemberment and
some of them
misogyny,
but it's,
and
less misogyny. Yeah, generally less misogyny, especially since like Gail Simone wrote a good chunk of him too.
This is true.
You know, it all just kind of depends on certain tones or certain runs. But I mean, they amped it up for sure. They took the R and they ran with the R.
I have a friend who said that he's sorry that it's this movie that pushed that was the largest R rating box office hit. He feels that there are a bunch of other R rated movies that deserve that title.
I mean, did it exceed like sales? Did it exceed sales of Mad Max Fury Road? Was that not an R?
Don't know.
Okay. All right.
Was Mad Max? I don't think. Mad Max. I think that might have been just PG-13.
Okay, all right. Yeah. All right.
Comparing Memento to Deadpool, though, right? Like, I mean, those are different calibers.
I would sub-caliber,
I mean,
you know.
If you want, you know, some crass jokes and silly slapstick humor and stuff like that. Like, I wouldn't go see Memento for that.
Right, right.
No, it's not in Memento.
Deadpool does serve a purpose. I got to tell you that there's only one moment in the movie that, because I bought it, right? I'm like, yeah, I'm all there. But there's one moment, and it's when Deadpool shoots Ajax / Francis and Colossus vomits.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, come on. I think
you weren't buying into that.
I didn't know.
Colossus that was, is made of sterner
the
stuff.
Only. apparently, you know.
I know. Terrible. We have it on film now that he's shaking his head.
-25 anyway, from
so
Gryffindor.
What was the consensus? What was the attitude about how you felt about the film?
Well, I liked it. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I'd see it again.
I enjoyed it. I went in with basically, so to me, Deadpool, and especially a media Deadpool, is targeting what I consider to be the lowest common denominator. Oh, murder and sex. And like, you know, the perfect Juggalo film, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And I felt that this one, while still having that appeal, managed to sneak in actually an engaging story instead of characters. Mm-hmm. And it had a good rollout, had good pacing for me. So, and it was true to the character for the most part. Mm-hmm. So I thought, like, well done. You managed to kind of be a little bit of something for everybody, mm-hmm. without sneaking too much around, mm-hmm. you know? So it won for me on that front.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, like, I'm not a fan of too much CGI, right. But I thought Colossus was fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought it was a fun interpretation of the character. I was disappointed that he killed Ajax at the end there.
Oh, you were? I knew it was going to happen once Colossus started going into spiel.
It was telegraphed, so I thought that was lazy.
Yeah.
But I also, like, one of my favorite runs of Deadpool is about him learning not to kill people to try and be a better person.
Okay.
So I thought, like, that's a great opening. Oh, you're telegraphing this. You're going to disappoint me in 3, 2, 1. There we go.
Yeah, you see, know. And I liked it because it's always, like, the let's be good people. It's like, no, let's just be bad people and just call it good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's fine by me. Yeah.
What'd you think, Cole?
Well, I surprised myself. I was set to hate it 6 ways from Sunday.
Really?
And because I don't care for the character. To me, Deadpool represented a period of comic books that I was hoping was a passing thing. And he kept hanging on and hanging on. And I think one of the reasons why.
He's got those extraordinary regenerative powers.
Good point. Yep. But also, Chris's point, which I've never bothered to pursue because I can't bring myself to care enough. But that Chris has always reiterated that it really depends who's handling the character, how that character, you know, ultimately how the appeal works, and that there are different Deadpool story arcs done by different people who have a different appeal. I thought it was a well done film. I did not laugh once because I did feel it was pretty.
It's
self-congratulatory. The humor got really old for me really, really fast. However, I got to a point in the film, I'm like, what is the point? What is the point? What is the point of this character? And after all of the sequences with with Colossus being such a relentless Boy Scout, I'm like, Deadpool is the product center of the Marvel Universe. You have to have that. You know, once upon a time, I would argue that it was Howard the Duck. And now it's Deadpool. And you know, I think that a cohesive character universe needs that kind of, or a superhero universe needs that kind of character. Mm-hmm. And he fulfills that role and does it really successfully because, you know, I'm an old X-Men fan, and you know, I think my younger self would have been super offended at how they treated Colossus. And I'm like, but no, he's actually pointing out, you know, the flaws, the philosophical flaws in the superhero mythos, the self-importance, the machismo, the whole vainglorious aspect of being this, you know, self-important good guy. And Deadpool skewers all that. And the film does that really successfully, you know. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, there were more in-jokes. I couldn't keep track of all the in-jokes in that film and the visuals. But what really kind of puzzled me, and I want to put this on the table to you guys, is concluding the story, the climax of the story, being in the helicarrier. Mm-hmm. Right? So, because the helicarrier, the derelict destroyed helicarrier from Captain America Winter Soldier, right? Mm-hmm.
That's what I assumed.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, like, but that's not your universe, kids. Right. And why is that there? And what are you saying? Are you saying, please, will you share your sandbox, MCU? Will you share your sandbox with us? Or was it, you know, some other comment from another direction?
Well, I also heard that there was actually supposed to be a whole extra chunk to that movie that mm-hmm. they had to tank out because of budgetary constraints. And so,
do you recall what was included in all that?
There was more X-Men characters. Actually, the line in the movie where Deadpool says we can't afford more was actually pretty true.
Yeah. So it's one of those things of maybe the helicarrier thing was sort of not last minute, but just sort of like, well, we can't do, so let's do a thing that might make people at least a little happy in some aspects.
Well, but you can't help recognize the overlap between the two filmic universes mm-hmm. with that, you know. Yeah. And I'm asking, why was that there? And what were you? Were you trying to say something with it? You could have, you know.
Wasn't there a joke somewhere in there about licensing as well? There's so many end jokes. So I'm sure that they were just tipping as many hats as they could. I mean, they managed to fit in the Green Lantern joke in there.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
twice.
There were a couple.
Twice.
There was a visual one.
There's a visual one, and then there's the straight up one, you know.
So, you know, and I can't help but appreciate that. But, you know, I was sitting in an auditorium of howling, guffawing men who just thought this was the funniest thing since I don't know what.
Pick a good funny thing.
Yeah. They just thought it was just the most. And I just, I did not laugh once. I just did not.
Oh, come on. Even when he called out Patrick Stewart and James McAvoy for being Professor X, that made me laugh.
I got the joke.
It was funny, though.
I got the just because you get the joke doesn't mean it's funny.
You're no fun, man.
Actually, I'm a lot of fun, Ben Lawrence. You should hang out with me.
Well, unlike Cole, I really enjoy it. I love lowbrow humor. Mm-hmm. It never gets old for me. So I knew that I was going to get that out of a Deadpool movie. And I don't read long stretches of Deadpool. I read like one shots here and there, and that's good, and I enjoy that.
Well, how did you feel about the depiction of his female counterpart?
His girlfriend?
Yeah, his girlfriend.
Fine.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't see her as being objectified. I mean, even literally, when they stick her in the tank and make her an object of possession. They didn't.
Well, what else are you going to do? He cares about her. I don't know. I didn't see any misogyny in the movie, if that's what you're alluding to.
Because that's one of the biggest complaints that I've heard about it, is that it's overly sexist. And
well, not only that, but she's...
No, he found a girl. She's bad, you know. They have good chemistry. They get together. They fall in love. They actually have a good life in being bad people, and yay. So,
well, tell me about her character.
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. So my
perspective...
She's
a stripper. She's this object of desire.
Make that money, girl. I don't know. Right. So here's my problem is when I saw the Deadpool trailer originally, I saw all the, like, the romantic elements to it, and mm-hmm. I just thought, like, oh, no, don't make this romantic. I don't really want that. So when I saw the movie, and it was pretty romantic... that actually was a bit of a letdown for me because I was really there for like the kind of meta lowbrow kind of stuff. Like, so it was a little bit of a dampening aspect to me. So, it didn't, I don't know. I just had a different perspective going into it, I think. And also I'm not, I kind of pick and choose where I'm going to be critical about women in things because mm-hmm. I felt like she was actually a really strong female character. And mm-hmm. I feel like they had a really good, they worked well together. They had a good chemistry. I believed their relationship. And that usually to me is like...
And she did get out of the tank and she did fight for herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
she saved Deadpool at one point.
She's scrappy. Yeah. I mean, every female in there I felt like could, you know, hold their own to some degree or another, you know.
And I will say one thing that did make me really happy was the inclusion of Blind Owl and Weasel. Because just as far as like... Not going to say like accuracy, but going back to what I considered one of the best runs of Deadpool, having those two characters in there for however brief they may have been was mm-hmm. great. Ajax was even in that run too, and I just don't really remember him that much because I'm like 10 plus years removed. But because there was a different villain that was like the biggest villain of that run, and he didn't show up anywhere. But so like I did like the fact that you, like with Blind Owl, you didn't, you had a relatively unnecessary to the plot character, but you had a variation of character. Yeah. And I like that.
And Weasel, was that his friend in the bar?
Yeah.
I like that actor.
Yeah.
Actually, TJ Miller, he's in this TV show on HBO called Silicon Valley. I might actually watch it now.
Oh, you've never seen Silicon Valley?
I've never seen Silicon Valley. I should watch it.
It's quite good. I've seen a couple episodes, and what I saw, I enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to know what happened to Angel Dust. We see Colossus carrying Angel Dust and Teenage Warhead. I forget her first name.
Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
It's a great name.
I am never going to remember that character's name.
But then Angel Dust, this really strong, literally strong female character, just disappears.
She's off panel. Yeah, you know she survives, but that's basically it. Which, yeah, I liked her as a basic henchman character. They didn't have time to give her much character. But I also like Gina Carano as well. So it's just like, yay, she's there.
Yeah.
And Marina Baccarin, who plays his girlfriend, has not aged at all in the years since Firefly was on the air. She looked exactly the same.
Yeah, that was uncanny.
I think she's a great actress too. So that.
Do we have any final thoughts on Deadpool? Generally thumbs up from us. Mm. Cole, a reluctant thumbs up.
Maybe neutral or something. Because you didn't come to meet her, but she didn't.
You respect the technical aspects of the film?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean,
it looked great.
I thought it was a well put together film. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work for me. The comic book has never worked for me. Mm-hmm. The characters never worked for me.
It didn't engage your interests.
I didn't get bored.
Okay.
No, I don't think that was possible. Cool. Here's the mistake I make, you guys. I make this with a lot of things. I'm always asking myself, any piece of entertainment, what does this say about us? What does this say about who we are, where we are at?
About Deadpool.
Well, yeah, but I have to ask that question, you know, and I ask it about most things.
Your head will blow up at B versus S.
Well,
the people versus,
you know, and how that and how that reflects on who we are, and I ask those questions. So. Sue me.
All right. Well, that's a yes from the three of us. And
how much money do you have?
Maybe a lukewarm from Cole. All right. Let's move on. Let's move on to Book Report. And Cole, let's start with you.
Oh, let's see. Chris, do we want to do our tag team?
Are you guys doing a joint review?
I'm going to let you have it completely.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Okay.
All right, later on this call.
I read Dark Knight 3-3, the third installment of the Dark Knight, the Master Race. Yet again, another, you know, adequately drawn Elseworlds story. Yeah, I mean, it's not poorly illustrated at all. The colors and the flow and everything is fine, but you know, there's just sadly there is nothing new happening in this story. We get a little bit more insight into who these evil Kryptonians are and what they're about. These evil fanatic Kryptonians come to take over the Earth. There's an interesting sequence where the aging Bruce Wayne and Carrie go to revive Superman in his Fortress of Solitude because he's given up on humanity and he's suffering from intense depression.
Taking a nap.
He's frozen, and they go and chip him out of the ice and force him to wake up. And I'm like, okay, that's an interesting moment.
There is a subplot or a sub-aspect of that that's just kind of dumb, because for me it's just like, okay, you're not asleep, you're just not moving, you're hyper-napping, but you could listen to everything in the world because we know you do that all the time. So the moment, like, cities explode, get off your duff.
Well, he's really depressed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it can be hard to get out of your ice cube if you're depressed.
He's like, I really want to be like that Steve Rogers guy. I like these ice cubes. I'm gonna try out your ice cube.
But, so sorry. Yes, no, maybe.
I don't think yes, no, maybe is even a question regarding the juggernaut that is DK3 now, because it's making DC money, and it's in an incredibly expensive book at how much is $5.99. For how many pages? Did you take a page count? For
40 was the first issue.
And then for a 10-minute read?
And then, yeah, essentially.
If you include the mini-comic, it's 40.
And then your totally superfluous inserted mini-comic. Right. But, you can also get your hardbound edition, right?
Yeah, for $12.
For $12.
$12.99.
$12.99, which is the exact same thing.
Same pages.
But the tipped-in book is actually...
Full-sized.
Is actually... tucked in the back.
Yeah. Which is nice to put it out of the way of breaking the story up.
Yeah. I think I said it before. I will probably read this to the bitter end because I'm curious that way. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of nice moments with Carrie and Bruce. It's not awful. It's just not what it could be. Mm.
You had higher expectations for
it. Well, no.
No.
No. I think I'm just looking at it in the context of the creative people involved, and there's just still no getting past that it's a money grab.
It's not as bad as it could have been.
I like the way Chris just put it. It's not as bad as it could have been.
Okay.
Sort of like Deadpool.
DK33. Not as bad as it could have been. All right. Well, Chris, what about you?
I read the first issue of Mark Waid and Chris Samnee's Black Widow. Hmm. They are the team that did one of the best runs of Daredevil in the past couple decades. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love Chris Samnee. He's a very clean line style, fantastic draftsman, great narrative storyteller. And Mark Waid is Mark Waid. He sometimes is a super hit. He's usually never a big miss. Sometimes he could just be there. It's a very quick read. I'll say that as a not really a negative. It's just basically it's Black Widow running away from S.H.I.E.L.D. and jumping off of helicarriers and making it into a ballet. And it's basically just it's a show of just how fantastic she is, how dangerous she is. And she's stolen something from S.H.I.E.L.D. And now the question is, basically they just give you a huge mystery with very minimal plot to begin with. That sounds weird. But I have complete faith in it. And it's engaging and it makes you question where are you going? So as a first issue, it's a really solid, good, interesting read. It's just a quick read. So yeah.
All right. Black Widow number one. Thanks, Chris. What about you, Nicole?
Well, I went super indie and I...
super very, small, too.
Super small. Super small and super indie. There's a small publisher called Silver Sprocket and they're a record label and a zine publishing house. And I think they did a punk rock anthology we got samples of before, and it actually had some decent names of people who do other work for other publishers in the industry. But this is just, super what does it all mean kind of thing, but also with some references of if you're a band on tour, what you deal with people isn't it so great to look at Paris and whatever, and they're just it's not about that, so it's part rant, part some meta. There's no real context to begin with, which is fine. I'm okay with that, but I just wanted to know what the flow was. What does this panel mean versus this next page where there's seven guys, they're all the same guys, and they're talking to each other about talking to each other, and it was cool because I like weird things like that. I like stuff from Drawn and Quarterly. I think it's Drawn and Quarterly who did The Blot, and it's just weird artsy fartsy avant-garde kind of stuff, but this is got a little kind of punk rock context to it. Let me see if I find any panels in here specific.
What's it called again?
It's called Goodbye.
Okay.
It's by Ben Passmore. And, the guys are talking to each other, and they say, okay, here's an idea. We make a run for it. We go somewhere new where no one knows us. We won't be a new person, but we'll see ourselves fresh and without pretense. It's just, silly things like that. And they just keep having these conversations, we should do this. No, how about that? No, that's stupid. So... It's silly, it's weird, but I enjoyed it. It just didn't really have much context.
It's a kind of stream of thought.
Yeah, it's kind of a stream of thought, but it has more narrative than some other stuff I've read, which makes no sense. And I actually like the art style in it. I think it's kind of cool. I think if you're interested in this, I would check out silversprocket.net and see what else they do. Especially if you like the punk rock scene and just sort of commentary on that. I know that they've done some stuff on that. That's been fun and interesting. So, or maybe not even just punk rock. I think just like
rock, rock,
rock, rock stuff. Yeah,
rock and roll.
Yeah, but yeah, it was just a sampler that we got, and so I figured I'd read it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Goodbye by Ben Passmore.
Is that is he a local?
No, they're based out of California.
Oh, okay.
They're out of San Francisco.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, we play quiz time. But before we do that, I want to tell you that the Perfect Balance podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. You can see everything Nicole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. Episode 4 is coming out so soon.
Soon.
We're actually recording the final ADR tonight, and then I hand the files off to our audio mastering person, and it'll
be... Do we want to talk about the plans? For...
We'll do that later. Right. You can find it at thepaneljumper.com. We're also brought to you by the Comic Sunshin, which is where we are. You get a different angle of the store today. And you can come to the Comic Sunshin at 319 Northeast 45th Street here in beautiful downtown Wallingford, just north of downtown Seattle, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsunshin.com. Please subscribe to us at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Did you hate Deadpool with a passion? Tell us why, and we'll read it aloud on the air. All right, today's quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. Today's quiz time questions are brought to us by Cole Hornaday. Laid on us, Cole.
Me. Oh, I thought I had a little bit of wiggle time.
Nope.
Okay. This week's Perfect Bound podcast trivia questions. The theme is We Are Family. These questions all pertain to sibling super beings.
All right.
Ready, player one. Originally introduced in Hanna-Barbera's wildly successful Saturday morning cartoon series, The Super Friends, in 1977, these... Now, hold on. I wrote all this great copy here, brother.
Do it.
These purple-complected twins had the ability to grind any on-screen action to a stupefying halt while they transformed themselves into innocuous household items like ice cubes, dust mops, and tepid buckets of water to solve an equally innocuous crime, Chris.
You got your hand up.
I don't remember their... I know the name of the monkey, but I don't remember their name.
Okay, well, hold on to that.
That's okay. Important, though.
Okay.
The Wonder Twins.
Right, Jan. And their names were...
Jan?
Keep going.
Zana?
Keep going. You know, young man, you should keep your hand down if you're not ready to respond.
And Bleep? Blip? Gleek?
Zan and Jaina the Jaina. Wonder Twins. Okay.
Zan and
bonus
Jaina.
Question. Name their chatter-prone monkey pal. Sir.
It's like Ben. Gleek or something, right?
Gleek. And isn't right. That what happens when you involuntarily squirt saliva out of your mouth?
It is, actually. I always thought that Jan got a raw deal because Jaina could always transform into like a cool animal like a cheetah or a panther, and Jan became Fog with a face.
I know, right? I just hated those guys.
All right, number
them.
Two.
Number two, they were the first to flesh and blood. They were the first two flesh and blood brothers in all Christendom. They now manage households at the boundaries of the Dreaming, the domain of the Sandman. One tells his tales from within the walls of DC's House of Mystery, and the other from the House of Secrets. And whenever they meet, the younger of the two seldom survives the experience.
Cain and Abel.
Cain and Abel, but can you identify the houses they both oversee?
Ooh.
This is a toughie.
Was Secrets Abel?
Other way around. So Cain was the caretaker of the House of Mystery, and Abel was the caretaker of the House of Secrets. Mm. But good, nice try.
Is that where the Vertigo series House of Mystery spun out of?
Yes.
Yep.
Hey.
Yep. Yeah, all but right. They were like, you know, they were like the those are the horror anthology books, yep. Yep. Akin to the EC comics.
So these guys would host them like the Crypt Keepers.
But I don't think I ever made the connection as a younger reader that they were Cain and Abel from the Bible.
Right. Gotcha. Gotcha.
These two mutant twins have the ability to move faster than the human eye can follow, and they were original members of the Canadian government super team Alpha Flight.
North Star and Aurora.
Very good. Both made their first appearance in Marvel's Uncanny X-Men in number 121 in 1979. Now, tell me something significant about Brother North Star.
He's the first superhero to come out as gay.
Yeah, he was the first openly gay superhero. Right. Next up, born on Wundagore Mountain, home of the High Evolutionary, these two form... Just let me finish reading the question.
I just like that he's...
Because
this
copy...
This whole quiz.
These two...
You do you.
I
talented.
No, I'm not going to say that. These two former mutant twins were brought up to believe they were the progeny of Golden Age superheroes Miss America and the Whizzer. The Whizzer. And for many years believed this to be true, even when their biological father, Magneto, indoctrinated them into his Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, Chris Kusso.
Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
That's right. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver were original members of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. They both made their debuts in X-Men number 4 in 1963. And last up... Is it last up? No, I got one more. Two more. This one is pretty much a gimme. They were one half of the Fantastic Four.
Oh, Sue Storm and Johnny Storm.
That's right.
Invisible Woman, Human Torch.
I wasn't prepared for math. Fractions just happened.
Oh, did you? Oh, you thought I was going to have more copy there.
You had more copy.
Yeah, it's going to do a little switcheroo on you.
Yeah, yeah.
I am full of surprises. Lastly, we have two more actual mutant siblings. These kids are from Russia. One possesses the ability to transform himself into a being of organic metal, and the other spent her formative years in the dark realm of Limbo and is now a mistress of the mystic arts, able to transport herself through time and space.
You're pointing at me like I should know it. Should I know it?
One of them was just in the movie we were talking about.
Oh, Colossus.
Very good.
And Magic.
And Magic, Ileana. Right.
Ileana,
right. So Pyotr and Ileana Rasputin, a.k.a. Colossus and Magic. Colossus first appeared in Giant Size X-Men number 1 in 1975, and Magic first appeared in, and Magic, not Ileana, because apparently she appeared as, you know, non-mutant earlier. But she first appeared in New Mutants 11, or New Mutants number 14 in 1984.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you, Cole. We will see you next week.